the Inspired Parenting Radio Show with host Sandy Sedgebeer, where our mission is to inspire conscious parents, families, and educators by bringing you the latest research and thinking on supporting today's highly evolved children to fulfill their potential as healthy, confident, resourceful, and emotionally intelligent individuals.
And you're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. Parents these days are bombarded with so much advice from experts on how to raise their children. It's easy to feel overwhelmed and insecure about your own parenting strategies. Are you supposed to praise children, or will that make them narcissistic? Do you involve yourself in playtime, or let them figure it out on their own? Should you insist on your child taking up a particular sport or activity because it's good for them to exercise and socialise, even if they don't like it? In the face of so much conflicting advice, it's easy to get caught up in the so-called right ways of parenting and completely forget that every child is unique and that what works for one may not work for another. In a world that's becoming increasingly stressful and overwhelming for children and their parents, the one thing families don't need, says this week's guest, is more pressure. Katie Hurley is a child and adolescent psychotherapist and a blogger who also writes for several online publications, including PBS Parents and the Huffington Post. The author of The Happy Kid Handbook, How to Raise Joyful Children in a Stressful World, which focuses on simplifying what has become way too complicated and confusing. Katie joins us today to help us sort out some of the good advice from the bad advice and remind us of what's really important about parenting. Katie, welcome to the Inspired Parenting Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Katie, The Happy Kid Handbook encourages parents to do something rather radical, which is follow your own instincts and meet your children exactly where they are. Now, there's a lot of parents that I'm sure will breathe a huge sigh of relief at hearing that because they don't hear it often enough. When did you come to that realization for yourself?
Well, I came to that realization for myself early on because I happen to have a husband who travels a lot for his work. He's a musician. And although I also work, I'm left behind frequently to be the primary parent while he's on the road. And I realized early on that I can't get caught up in the latest and greatest and trying to please other people and trying to do things the so-called right way, whatever that is, at any given moment, because I'm in it on my own a lot of the time. And I have to just do what's right for my kids. So I came to it, you know, for my own kids, I came to that pretty early on when they were toddlers. But prior to that, I've been working with children and families for many, many years. And I've seen the evolution of parenting in the last decade or so, where parents are sort of caught up trying to raise these super kids. And it really has changed. And a lot of things have changed in parenting. But I've seen it happen before my eyes with the kids who come through my office. And I encouraged parents along the way to step back and get back in touch with who their kids really are.
It's difficult, isn't it? I mean, I really do feel for, you know, young parents today. Obviously, it's a long time since I was parenting young children, but I have young grandchildren, and I see how tough it is for my son and my daughter because they have so many more things to contend with. And a lot of the things that we were told in my day that were the quote, right way to parent, and now being thrown out completely, leaving my generation with lots of, you know, complexes and guilt and yes. You know, concern over, oh my God, did we screw up our kids? There's too much information, isn't there?
It is a little bit, and I hear that too from sometimes I get email from parents, of course, all the time, but also from grandparents who are trying to figure out what their role is now and did they do it wrong the first time? And I always say, no, you know, you didn't do it wrong the first time. I mean, to some degree, parents are winging it right out of the gate when they get home from the hospital with an infant. I think we all feel that way. We just forget that feeling over time because you get so busy in trying to figure it out, and then you have all this information coming at you. And I do. I think it's just too much right now. It's too much too soon. And it doesn't leave room for parents to really just trust their guts. And that's super important.
That is such a big thing. I was delighted when I read that in your book, because I remember when my daughter-in-law had her first child and I went to England and, you know, was there from probably, you know, within a day of my granddaughter being born. And my daughter-in-law was just not only exhausted with, you know, as a new parent is, but she said she'd had so much advice from so many people, she didn't know what to do. And I said to her, hey, trust your instinct. And that was like giving her, you know, gold, because it was the first time anyone had said it to her.
Yeah. I mean, I remember the first time my mom was out with me for a while after my daughter, my first, was born. She came out for a few weeks because I live in California, but I'm from the East Coast. And I remember at one point we had gone for a checkup with my daughter, and she had gained a lot of weight, which was good because she was small when she arrived. And when we got home, my mom said, look at you. You did it all by yourself. You're doing it. You're doing it on your own. And I like stared at her for a minute, and then I heaved this big sigh of relief, because you do wonder, am I doing it right? Am I feeding them enough? Am I doing enough? Is it, you know, am I making mistakes? But she just looked at me and said, look at that. You just did this all by yourself. You're working it out. And I thought, oh, that was just like, she gave me permission to just keep doing what I'm doing, you know, to just trust myself. And that was huge.
Yeah, we've lost a lot with progress. I mean, previous generations, they didn't really think about, you know, a child's psychological well-being, maybe not their emotional well-being, as long as they were fed and looked after and, you know, given a safety, etc. That was the main thing. And now the pendulum has swung so far, and we're so conscious about all of the things we're supposed to be giving to our children, that I think we forget to allow them to be children.
That's true. Yes. I mean, that's absolutely true. And part of it, too, is that the landscape of fear has changed for parents over time, too. We can't discount that. You know, things are happening today that we're hearing about as they're happening that didn't happen 20, 30 years ago. So parents are living a much different life. It's a different way of parenting. And I think the unfortunate part of that is that kids are growing up too fast, and they're not really being given the opportunity to just hang out and be kids and figure stuff out. You know, and I do see, I think there are pluses and minuses to everything. I love that there are developmental classes for toddlers. You know, like Gymboree is a wonderful program for babies and toddlers for an hour a week to just get out and do things and try new things. But the flip side of that is that there's so many of those that sometimes parents are just stacking their babies and toddlers into all these programs, and that's too much, you know, too much of a good thing.
As you say in the book, you know, anxiety and depression are on the rise, and it's not just in adults, and kids are over scheduled and play deprived. So where do we begin? I mean, your plea is, let's get back to basics. Let's take back childhood so that kids don't feel quite so overwhelmed. Where would you advise someone begin?
Well, I think the most important thing, and the thing that we've really gotten away from, is knowing your own child. You know, it's fine to have a blueprint in your mind of how you think you want your parenting journey to be when you're pregnant and waiting for the baby to arrive. But the truth is, you don't know what you're going to get until you get it. And every kid really is different. And we notice it even in infancy when we start saying, oh, this one, you know, looks away if I sing too much, or this one doesn't want to play with that toy. We're trying to figure them out. But then we kind of put that on the back burner and we just start doing all of the things and throwing all of the educational toys at them and, you know, reading until their eyes fall out because that's good for them, without realizing, well, what does this individual need? So I think that's the most important thing that parents can do, is sort of step off the treadmill and just really get to know the individual child and what their individual needs are.
Now, you write in the book about an introverted child, the extroverted child, and, you know, the other verts, the ones that are kind of in between, the in-between is. And that's really important, actually, because how children, you know, we don't really know our children, and we may assess their behavior at home. We don't always get to see what their behavior is like in school, etc. So we don't get a full rounded picture. How can we know whether a child is truly introverted or just shy?
Well, a large part of knowing if a child is introverted is kind of looking at the big picture of how they interact in different areas. I mean, no, maybe you don't know exactly how they are all day long at school, but developing a good relationship with the teacher can help fill in some of those blanks, and you can kind of get a picture of how they interact with other kids and things. But I think, you know, in general, the introverts of the world are the kids who kind of take the wait and watch approach. You know, they like to observe things first. They need time to kind of re-energize after they've been in a busy situation or been around a lot of kids. So these are the kids who get home from school and really don't want play dates, or they don't want to go to soccer practice, because being in a classroom with 24 other kids all day long has completely exhausted them. And they want to come home and just play with their toys or read a book or build Legos or, you know, whatever it is that they're interested in. And they also sometimes can be anxious, or they sometimes can seem like they're aloof, or they don't, you know, want to be around a lot of people. That's not necessarily true. It's just that these are the kids who draw energy from being one-on-one with other kids. So they don't like to be surrounded by a huge group. And I think if we watch them at home, we watch them at the park, we kind of see how they interact at birthday parties and things, you can figure out what your child's preferences are. You just have to pay attention to the clues.
Now, you say that we should allow our children plenty of time for self-discovery. The world has changed so much. Children don't anymore get a chance to just romp in the woods for the day, coming home at tea time, you know, when mum calls them, and just, you know, making up their own games. What can we do? I mean, safety is a big concern, of course, but how can we give our children, you know, those opportunities while still keeping them safe?
Well, you know, we say that safety is a big concern, and in some areas, certainly it is, but it not everywhere. You know, there are plenty of areas all over this country where kids can be safe out in their backyards. I mean, it's not that they have to be out in a giant wooded area with a pond in the middle. You know, they just need time. So even just in their own backyard or front yard, or even just in their own bedrooms, I mean, what they really need is time to just tap into their imaginations and make stuff up and just be who they want to be. So it doesn't need to be the perfect wooded area.
So we'll come back to this in a moment, Katie. You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and my guest is child psychotherapist, blogger, and author of The Happy Kid Handbook. We'll be back in a few moments.
This is OTR-FM. Part of the iOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi, this is Sylvia Henderson, intuitive life coach and energy healer. Are you ready to elevate and rise way above your normal? Be sure to listen to my show, Intuitive Transformations, on OM Times Radio, Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. Eastern. Get the inspiration you need to transform your life.
Host your show on iOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on iOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth Radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Out there and learn to follow your instincts and meet your kids exactly where they are. Katie, it is a hard one, isn't it? I mean, meeting your kids exactly where they are, especially if you've got, you know, more than two children. I think anything more than two always seems to quadruple the work rather than double it.
That's true.
And, you know, it's a hard task for parents to have the time that they need to meet all their children's needs. How many children do you have?
I have two children.
And how old are they?
They are 7 and 9.
And how difficult or how easy do you find it to balance, you know, their needs, their individual needs, and giving them the time to play with them and to meet whatever needs they have in any given moment?
Well, I will say the one piece of my own advice that I do follow to a T is that I do not overschedule them at all. And they know that. The deal is that they can do one thing at a time. So, for instance, my 9-year-old daughter is an Irish dancer, and that's her thing. And that's what she wants to do right now. So she dances a couple of afternoons a week, and sometimes I only send her one afternoon a week if she's looking tired or if we just want extra playtime. And my son played soccer in the fall, and that ended, and we took a couple months off, and now he's playing basketball, which is a 10-week program. So he's not. At one point, he said he was wanting to play flag football, but the two sports overlapped, and I told him he had to choose, and he chose basketball. So that's one way that I sort of keep things in perspective with my own kids, is that we don't do every single thing that's happening. You know, if Riley decides she wants to take an art class, then we'll dial down the dance and do art for a little while. And we kind of switch things up and they get to try new things, but we don't do it all at once. And that's something that kids are doing today from a very young age, is that they're doing it all at once. And when I encourage parents to stop this practice, what they say to me is, "But my kids want that. That's what they want. Those are their individual needs." And what I always respond to parents is that kids want a lot of things. You know, take them to a toy store. They're going to find 20 things they want. It doesn't mean that they know exactly what they need. And it's up to us to help guide them toward living a balanced life. And if we teach them now how to balance their own lives, they'll be much better at it by the time they get to be adults. And they won't be feeding into this overscheduling thing that seems to have taken over the world. You know, there's no badge of honor for being the busiest mom on the block. And I think we need to realize that and accept that and figure out how we can dial back the family stress as a whole. So, you know, that's one place to begin. But, you know, and if I had more kids, would it be harder? You know, possibly. I mean, I don't know. Everybody goes through things. And, you know, we tried to have more kids and we're not able. So I don't know. We, you know, everybody goes through hard things. I think, you know, families are families and everybody's family is different and you have to figure out what works for you. But saying that kids need to do every single class and every single sport just because other kids are doing it, there's no value in that. You know, that's a recipe for stress.
I'm curious to know, how did your daughter get attracted to Irish dancing? I mean, was this something she had seen and wanted to do or experienced at school?
We stumbled upon it. I mean, it's kind of funny. From a very young age, she wanted to dance. And so I put her in a ballet class when she was 4, and she thought it was boring because it was too slow. So I thought, watching it, I thought it is kind of boring. And then somebody else said, "Oh, well, there's this other dance class that's more like modern dance." So we went and watched that, but that didn't seem right either, you know. And then I heard that there was this teacher in town who, you know, just a couple blocks from our house, who taught Irish dance, and that there was a studio, and she taught to very young kids of all ages, all levels. It wasn't super competitive. It was just kind of fun. And, you know, so we looked into it, and then funny enough, it was her kindergarten year, and 2 weeks later, this teacher shows up at her school around St. Patrick's Day to teach the kindergartners a few moves, and they did this whole assembly about Irish dance because she just likes to go into the schools and expose kids to it. It's a family business that's been a business for over 40 years, and so Riley really took to it, and she loved this teacher, and the teacher's just wonderful and someone who kind of understood her introverted nature right away, and it just became her thing. And, you know, we have peaks and valleys, and, you know, we always take the summer off, and sometimes she'll say, "Oh, I want to dance a little less. I want to try something new," and she will, and then she kind of always goes back to it because she just feels really confident when she's there.
You make a really good point in the book about people confusing passion with skills. And you say that baseball, for example, is an easy passion to support because it involves a certain skill set. and parents can sign up for team and cheer their kids on. But when kids are passionate about computers, parents assume that that's just draining their brains with games. But even that can be, you know, there's skills involved in that too. So how do we know the difference?
Well, I think the problem there is that we, especially in America, we're very ingrained to be drawn to sports because it makes sense and because there are so many available and at such a young age. You know, when I was a kid, you didn't start playing soccer until about fourth grade. Well, now they're playing at age two, you know, and baseball starts at age five and ice hockey starts at age five. I mean, all these things are just readily available and they're easy and parents can sort of sit back and watch while a kid learns something. And we don't always necessarily listen. I mean, I've had so many parents come to me and say, I don't know why my kid will just sit there on the soccer field and pick grass. And I'm like, well, I don't think he likes it. You know, I think maybe it's not fun. And I think, you know, it's a struggle to wrap their heads around, well, what my kid likes is, I had one mom say to me, all he wants to do is play Legos. And I said, did you know that there's a really cool Lego club at our local school? And the kids are building, I mean, it brings in engineering, and they're building all these great things, and it's really neat, and these are all kids who are passionate about Legos. And she's like, yeah, but that's not really a thing. And I said, of course it's a thing, you know. So, you know, after much prodding, she checked it out, and then the kid started doing it, and he loves it. You know, we have to listen to our children and figure out what their interests are. Do kids need exercise? Yes. Do they get exercise by going on swings and climbing up and down slides and running around outside? Yes. It doesn't need to be an organized sport. That's what we've forgotten. You know, people always say, what was better 20 to 30 years ago? Well, kids were just playing because it was fun, not because it was an organized sport.
Wow. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Now, what about when they want to quit these things? Some parents get really upset if their child has been part of a team and then suddenly they just want, they've had enough. And they often, some won't let the child quit, and or the child feels guilty for quitting. How do you handle that one?
Well, that's really hard, and that's happening a lot. Part of what's going on is that parents are feeding their own need for their children to play sports. You know, when 20 years ago, not as many kids dreamed of being in the NBA. If you went around right now and asked a bunch of little boys who had basketballs in their hands if they thought they were going to be in the NBA, they would say yes. I mean, there was actually a recent survey that came out, and I can't remember the exact percentages, but basically they had interviewed college basketball players, men playing basketball, and a really high percentage of guys playing at Division III schools thought that they still had a shot at the NBA, which really isn't terribly realistic. But as a society, we've come to view sports, you know, Olympics and professional sports as this huge goal that anyone can attain. And that's just not true. It's a very small percentage of kids who go on to get scholarships to college and who from there go on to play professionally. And parents sort of put their own feelings into it. You know, they see maybe what they think is talent and they get really involved in it. And I can understand because my son is pretty athletic for seven, and it's hard to sit on the sidelines and just sort of not overthink what's happening in the game. You know, I mean, you want to just be the parent who sits and cheers when something's good, but then when something's bad, you can't help but say something. I mean, it's really, really hard. So I think that we get too wrapped up in what our children are doing, and it becomes our need, not theirs. And I think, you know, parents need to take themselves out of the equation and learn how to say, this is what my child wants to do now. This isn't for me. This is for them. I mean, I could go play in a pickup league if I need to play basketball, but what does my child need to do? And that's, you know, it's hard, but it's something that parents need to practice.
Now, one of the hot potatoes in parenting is this question of whether we praise our children or how we praise our children. What do you have to say about that one?
Well, I think that we overthink praise. I think it's gotten a little bit, we've gone off the rails a little bit. You know, there's all this research on growth mindset, and I love it. I love the growth mindset because you want to raise kids who think that they can do it regardless of what we think. We want to raise kids who know that even if they fail or even if they mess up, that they can look at what they did and find a new solution. I mean, because when you raise kids like that, you're raising problem solvers. So I think that's sort of where the praise thing started, was let's not praise every single thing every single drawing, every single thing, because then kids think that they're just great at everything and they don't have to learn how to problem solve. I think we went a little too far in the other direction, and now we're caught in between, well, what's right? And for me, I mean, I always say that I appreciate a pat on the back. You know, when I've, you know, had something exciting happen, you know, I start writing for the Washington Post, and my husband is telling all his friends and saying, hey, I'm so proud of you. You're writing for the Washington Post. And I'm like, yeah, that feels good. You know, it feels good for someone to give me praise for something I worked hard for. And I like it. So if, and as an adult, that something like that makes me feel good and inspires me to keep working hard, then why should I take that away from a small child who's also working hard at things? You know, maybe what they're working hard at is learning how to, you know, put a bunch of blocks in a tower without it falling over. And maybe that seems like a small thing, but they're trying. So I think we just have to be, if we think about how we praise and what we're praising, you know, praising effort so that it's not always about success. You know, like my husband will sometimes say to me, you know, your book is so great. And even though I read it before, every time I pick it up and I read something, I learn something and I, you know, love how you said this. I mean, those are the kind of things that we need to turn around and say to kids. Like, it's not that you drew the best drawing I've ever seen. It's that, wow, look at those lines. You must have worked really hard to get those lines so straight. Or, you know, you must have worked really hard to make those eyes pop off the page the way they do. I mean, that's, you know, praise what they're doing, the efforts that they're making. And then they see that, oh, yeah, it's all in what I do. It's not what I produce. It's what I do that matters.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, this is a very much the English disease in that you don't praise your kids too much because everybody's so afraid they're going to get big-headed. And, you know, the children shouldn't be, you know, praising themselves either. And right. So far the other way that it's, you know, you can't own anymore what you're good at. And I think
you can, and that's a shame.
It is a shame. Yeah.
It's a shame. I mean, people are talented and people have unique talents, and why can't we celebrate that? We should, you know?
We should indeed. You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with child psychotherapist and parenting blogger Katie Hurley. We'll be back in a few moments when Katie is going to share why play is so vital and why it's so important to teach your children about forgiveness. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
Matt Connerton here. Join Jen Coffey and I twice a week for Matt Connerton Unleashed, a political talk show that's a little different than what you're used to. No liberal or conservative agenda here, just an honest dialogue about truth and how things really work in the world of politics. Matt Connerton Unleashed, every Tuesday and Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Katie, let's talk about play. I mean, a lot of people are very dismissive. Oh, they're just playing. Oh, go and play, you know. And the way we talk about it as if it's a really insignificant thing. But in fact, it's far from that. Tell us why.
Well, play is really the work of childhood. You know, we think that it's just this luxury, this thing that kids are doing and that it kind of like kills time in between things that we're doing. But play is actually an integral part of child development. I mean, they learn so many things. And what parents forget is that they actually learn, you know, people get really focused on early math skills and early literacy skills now because, God forbid, they go to kindergarten without being fluent readers these days. But they actually learn those things when they're playing. They learn about themselves. They figure out what they're interested in. They build gross and fine motor skills. They learn how to get along with other kids. They tap into their imagination and become creative problem solvers. They learn how to figure out how things work. So when children are engrossed in play at every age and stage, they really are learning. I mean, that's how they figure out the world around them.
And that's what we're taking away from them when we overschedule them.
Absolutely.
That time that they need to be able to figure things out.
It's true. And parents often complain that kids say that they're bored all the time or that they don't know how to handle boredom. But the reason that kids do that is because they haven't had the opportunity to be bored and to be just at home figuring out what they want to do and figuring out a game. I mean, and it's so important for building friendships and things. I mean, I'm always telling parents, you know, you want to organize these play dates that are highly orchestrated with crafts and snacks and all this stuff. But when we're constantly telling kids how to be, they don't learn how to be on their own. And that's what they learn when they're just lost in play with other kids, be it siblings or friends or whatever.
That's a really good point. You know, I remember several years ago when my daughter was pregnant with her second child and she was hospitalized, something was wrong, and she spent about a month in hospital and I went to England to look after my grandson. And one of the things, he was fascinated, he was only three, coming up to four, fascinated by what went on in the hospital. So I bought him a little doctor's set. And over and over and over again, he would play doctors, mimicking what he'd seen the doctor do. And it's fascinating. But what he's doing is he's processing that information in his brain, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, and probably working through maybe some fears or something mm-hmm. that caused him to worry about mom. You know, that's really when kids have anxiety and fears. They really can work through that stuff using play. And you don't even need, you know, I mean, it's great when you can have specific sets, but kids on their left to their own devices are very industrious and they really don't need 1,000 toys and the perfect playroom. I mean, we all dream of like creating this perfect play space for our children, but I always joke to parents, you know, if you just give kids a bunch of cardboard boxes and a lot of tape, they'll figure it out. They'll mm-hmm. get it sorted, you know?
Yep. And they enjoy that so much more. They really do because, you know, they can create something out of nothing with that.
Yes, absolutely. I remember when my daughter was three, she has asthma and she gets croup a lot. And so around that time, she was getting very sick a lot with fevers and croup and things that we were constantly either going to the emergency room or to the doctor's office. And so she was always having her temperature taken by various people. And I remember at one point she just took like a baby spoon out of a drawer and she made it into her own temperature checker. And she started going around like sticking it in everyone's ears. And we're like, what is she doing? And then we realized, oh, she's checking our temperatures, you know, being a nurse. But that's what they do. They find things and they make things into what they need them to be.
Yeah. So the message there is for parents, don't forget to schedule time for play as well.
Which is sad, I know. And I feel like that's where we are, is you need to schedule free play time. And it shouldn't be that way. You know, it should be the other way around, where they are mostly lost in play and maybe you schedule a couple things. But we've kind of hit a wall here where we need to remind people to schedule play time.
Yeah. So tell us about forgiveness. You say that it is really important to teach children the skill of forgiveness. Why is this so vital?
Well, the thing about forgiveness is, and the mistake that a lot of us make, and I say us because I'm a parent too, and I know how hard it is, is that we say things like, you know, something goes wrong and we say, you say you're sorry, and the kid says sorry, and then we say, you say, I forgive you, and they say, I forgive you, and we don't really process the event. And when people carry around feelings of anger or sadness or just any kind, all those negative emotions that sort of arise when we have bad interactions with other people, when you carry those around and you don't really work them out of your system, you are more anxious. You're more likely to be anxious or stressed, even depressed. And even young children go through this. And we love to say kids are resilient. That's always the catchphrase. Kids are resilient. They get over things. And to some degree they are, but they also have really big feelings. And we don't always remember to pay attention to those feelings and to teach them how to cope with them. So when we learn to forgive, I know for myself as an adult, you know, sometimes, you know, life isn't always perfect. And sometimes I have interactions with another adult in my life that leave me feeling sort of shaken. I can choose to forgive that person and work through it, talk through it with somebody else and forgive and let go of it and move on and maybe live a calmer life. Or I can keep that inside and keep revisiting it and keep feeling anxious or keep feeling angry about it. And to hold on to those negative emotions really only damages me. You know, because the other person probably has already moved on, or maybe they haven't, but whatever it is, they're not coming back to me with it. So to teach kids the act of actually forgiving, so working through the negative emotions, talking about them, figuring out how to cope with them, and then saying, you know what, I'm going to forgive that person for that, and I'm going to move on and be positive. That sort of relieves them of holding on to all that stuff that can really drag them down.
You know, it's interesting. You remind me of a conversation I had with my granddaughter when I was in England over the Christmas holiday. And she's in the second grade, I think it is. She's seven. And she's got a friend who sometimes will play with her, sometimes won't. And she finds that very hard. And we were discussing this in the car, and Jessie's 11-year-old brother said, well, the next time she wants to play with you, you should say, no, I'm not playing with you, because you weren't very nice to me. And I said, well, hold on a minute, you know. In families, we forgive each other when things happen, you know, that are not pleasant. And, you know, maybe Jessie should look at forgiving Kaya. And he didn't agree with it at all. But you have something in your book that I thought was brilliant, the friendship map, which I'd love you to share with our listeners, because if I'd had that, I would have been able to do that with Jessie at the time.
Yeah, I've done this for years with clients, but I have also done it with my own kids, because my kids are, both of them are pretty introverted, but in different ways, but they both sort of prefer certain kids to play with, but those kids don't always want to play. You know, like you say, that's very typical for the seven, you know, the grade school years, for kids to sort of move in and out and switch between groups. So the friendship map is great for kids, because I have a whiteboard in my kitchen and we use it all the time for different activities, but you can do it on a piece of paper or a poster board. But what you do is you have your kids name all the people that are friends in their lives. So there's going to be that best friend. That's going to be the one that comes up first. But you kind of draw circles and say, well, who are the other friends that you have? Do you have a friend from your dance class? Do you have a friend from our street? Do you have a friend that you like to play with at the park? And you make circles and put down all the friends that the kids have. And then you sort of make it into a little map and you show them, okay, so if this friend isn't wanting to play right now, you know, you can either sit there and be upset about it and feel left out and lonely, or let's look at your map and think who else might be around that you can play with that day. And that doesn't mean that you're not friends with the first person anymore. It just means you're taking a different avenue and you're playing with a different friend right now, and that you can kind of sort of go through it and draw, you know, and draw lines and make it fun and put them in little, you know, areas of where they typically play with that kid or what they typically play to. Because sometimes what happens is kids get stuck in a cycle. And they'll say, like, well, I always play, you know, family at recess with Sarah. So if Sarah doesn't want to play with me, I don't know what to do, you know, because I've been playing family every day for 3 weeks. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do. That's kind of what happens with kids. And so when you make the map, you also write down, like, okay, well, Susie likes to play on the swings and Caroline likes to play in the sandbox. And you kind of just have different ideas so that your child can visualize it and see that she has A, more than one friend, and B, you know, different opportunities that are all fun and all choices she can make to make herself feel better.
You know, that is such a great way of helping children understand. I wish I'd known that before, because I think I could have used that particular incident as a really good moment to explain that to Jessie and to her brother as well.
Right, right.
You also, you have some great strategies in your book, some really good ideas. I'm very impressed with it, because I read, get to read a lot of parenting books and they're not all quite as rich. What's your favorite strategy?
Oh my goodness, of all time?
Yeah.
Well, I think for me, I see that kids are more stressed than they used to be. They're a little bit more anxious than they once were. So I love to teach kids deep breathing exercises and mindfulness exercises. My very favorite would be balloon breathing, which I've used with my own kids for years, and actually sort of prompted the book in a weird way, because my husband, when my kids were toddlers and he had been on the road, he snuck in on us and caught me doing this balloon breathing exercise with them. And I didn't hear him in the background. And all of a sudden he said, "Oh my goodness, this is magic. You have to tell all the parents of the world about this." But I have, when kids are stressed, or even just during sort of that so-called witching hour, when kids are getting, antsy at the end of the evening, I have my kids lay down. We all lay down together on the floor, and we just get comfortable and we pretend that we're going to blow up balloons. And so we'll say like, mine's going to be red, mine's going to be blue, and we'll design it. Oh, mine's going to have tie-dye, mine's going to have, trucks on it. And we'll think about, what's it going to look like? And then we practice deep breathing. So we put our hands up to our lips as if we're blowing up a balloon, and we take a big deep breath in, and I'll usually count to four so that they do a nice slow count of four breath in, and we'll hold it, and then I'll say, okay, blow up your balloons. And I always remind them beforehand, to blow up a balloon you have to blow slowly. You can't, if you blow too fast it'll pop out of your mouth. And so I'll count out four while they blow up their balloons, and they'll visualize blowing up that balloon, and I'll say, okay, tie a string on it, and they'll tie a string on it, and we'll watch it float away, and we'll say, oh, let's send it to Mimi in Connecticut, or let's send it to Papa in Massachusetts, and we'll kind of watch it float away in our minds, and then usually they love doing it, and it's so relaxing to the senses that we'll probably do two or three just for fun.
You're listening to the Inspired Parenting Radio Show. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm with child psychotherapist and parenting blogger Katie Hurley. After the break, we'll be looking at some more tips and strategies to help children deal with emotions like anger and frustration. We'll be back in a few moments. Stay tuned.
You're listening to OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors. Connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
The name is Bond. James Bond.
No, the name is Joe. The Joe Show. And we are returning back for our ninth season here on Old Times Radio. So tune in every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, on omtimes.com/mobile. You can take us wherever you go.
Yeah!
Host your show on iOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on iOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
This is OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
We're talking about her book, The Happy Kid Handbook. Katie, tell us some of the stress reduction tips and strategies that you offer in your book. Some of them sound really good, like the worry box and the worry brain activity.
I love to do the worry brain activity with kids. And you don't have to, have a highly anxious kid to need to do this, because all kids have some worry. That's normal. It's actually a good thing. If you, you know, if people didn't worry, they would do things like walk in front of a moving car. So having a worry center is actually a good thing. But doing a worry brain with a kid really helps them understand how their brains work and when a worry brain is being too loud, you know, and taking up too much space in their brain. So what I do, and, you know, God bless the internet, is download a template of a blank brain. And you can just Google blank brain template and a bunch will come up, you know, and I print one. And what I say to kids is I would draw a very small semicircle at the base of the brain. And what I say to kids is that everybody has a worry brain and it's generally pretty small, like this little semicircle. And then the rest of the brain is in charge of all of the other feelings. And what happens is when you're sometimes worry brains just get really too loud and out of control. And you start thinking of all the things that could go wrong. You know, I could get hit by a car. That dog could bite me. I could fail my spelling test. I could fail my math test. I could have no friends to play with today. And when your worry brain sort of gets turned on and it starts taking up too much space in your brain, it crowds out all the happy, positive emotions and it just sort of takes over. So what I do is I have kids fill up the larger part of the brain with all the things that make them happy. And that doesn't mean that it has to be activities or people. Like, it can be anything. I mean, I had one kid recently write meatloaf in there. Like, it's, you know, all the things that just make you feel good. Is it jelly beans? Great. Put that in there. Is it riding a bike? Is it feeling the wind in your hair or watching a sunset? All of the things that make you feel good, positive, energetic, happy, put that in the larger part of the brain. And then in the lower part, put the worries, because we have to acknowledge and understand our worries. And all kids have them, and some kids have bigger ones than others, but all kids have some. And if a kid ever tells you they don't have any worries, then they're just not in touch with their emotions, and that's another conversation. And sometimes it helps if parents do this activity alongside their kids so that kids can see that even adults experience a range of emotions. And so once the worry brain is filled out, what I say to kids is, so when your worry brain sort of kicks into high gear and starts telling you to think about all those things that make you worry, I want you to visualize your happy brain and take one of those strategies in your mind and say, stop it, worry brain. I don't have to be worried right now because I can ride my bike after school and that's going to make me feel good. Or I don't have to be worried right now because my mom is going to pick me up soon and I'm going to get a big hug and I'll feel better. So it just kind of helps them figure out how their brains work, and it starts planting the seeds of self-talk, which is a huge strategy for kids to learn how to use both for, you know, anxiety and for anger. And it sort of plants those seeds for them so that they realize they can have some control even when they're feeling out of control.
You know, I was looking at your blog earlier and I saw a piece on negative self-talk, and I was surprised that, you know, this is quite common with young children. So would you use the worry brain activity with a child that's, you know, indulging in a lot of negative self-talk?
Absolutely, yes. And sometimes I even flip it and I call it, instead of a worry brain, I call it the anger brain or the mad brain, you know, because we all have different negative emotions. You know, some of us are more apt to get angry first. Some of us are bigger worriers, you know, so whatever the negative emotion that's crowding out the positive one, you just put that in the smaller part and have them talk about those things. With what happens with kids with negative self-talk is kids by design tend to be black and white thinkers. You know, they haven't experienced enough of the world to know that sometimes you just have a really bad day, and it doesn't mean you're a bad person or that you're bad at everything, but that this day just isn't going well, you know, and things are happening that aren't great, but that's not a life sentence. Kids tend to be overreactors in their minds. And so they think, oh my gosh, I got, you know, 10 spelling words wrong. I stink at spelling. I'm never going to do well in school. You know, they start reeling. So the worry brain activity actually works really well for kids who tend to be negative thinkers, because it helps them sort out the negative from the positive and realize that the negative doesn't have to take over.
What about the trash can basketball technique for venting frustration? Tell us about that one.
That's a really fun one for kids. And it's actually a fun one for adults too, being a fun tip. But, you know, everybody gets mad. Everybody gets frustrated. as adults, we sort of take for granted that we know most of the time how to deal with that. I mean, maybe we don't always do it exactly right, but, you know, we know how to cope with our frustrating feelings, but kids really don't. And so they bottle them up and then they all come out in the form of like what a parent would call a meltdown or something, or a temper tantrum. But so what I do with kids is I have them name for me, just like yell it out, you know, because it feels good to yell when you're mad. So yell it out, like all the things that are making you mad right now. And I put one thing per piece of paper. I'll get a bunch of pieces of paper. And so if it's, you know, my friend didn't play with me, that's one piece. If it's my brother's being mean to me, that's another piece. And so we put them all down on pieces of paper, and I usually help them with the writing so that they can just focus on the feelings. And then they scrunch them up and they get, you know, go across the room, and I put out a little wastebasket, and they try to shoot them into the wastebasket. And as they're shooting them, they yell out like, you know, that made me feel bad that you didn't play with me today, or, you know, whatever the thing was that made them frustrated. And so they really learn to just vent it out, because if kids don't learn to vent their emotions, to get the negative out in a healthy way, they bottle it up and it comes out in an unhealthy way later.
Yeah, so true. Well, before we bring the show to a close, I know that you love guided imagery, and I think, you know, there's very few people who don't, but you have some great ideas for how parents can use guided imagery with their children. Could you share some of those with us?
I do love guided imagery, and, you know, it's sometimes it's hard for parents to wrap their heads around doing this, but when they do it and they engage with their kids and do this, it really calms both the parent and the child, because we have stress, you know, it's hard being a parent, and we need to acknowledge that. I often encourage parents to do this at night before bed. You know, bedtime battles are always a big concern among parents. You know, we get to the end of the day, we just want them to go to sleep. They get to the end of the day, all the worries they didn't talk about during the day come out, and they try to stay awake longer. So it's sort of like goes back and forth and back and forth. So building guided imagery, which really only takes 5 to 7 minutes into the process, can really be calming for everybody. And so I do this with my daughter almost every night. We call them relaxing stories. But I do want to say there is a program called Ready, Set, Relax. It's a book. You can get it on Amazon. It is full of guided imagery scripts, everything from, you know, ocean scenes to walking on a rainbow, all sorts of different things, if you don't want to come up with your own stories. But for kids, sometimes coming up with your own story really helps. So I'll say to her, where do you want to go tonight? And she'll say, I want to go to a lollipop forest. And I'm like, okay. So I have her close her eyes and I lay down next to her and we do a few deep breaths, kind of like the balloon breathing. And then I'll just start a story in a very kind of calming and monotone voice. And I'll talk about, okay, tonight mommy and Riley are going to the lollipop forest. So the first thing we have to do is get on the red path, because that's the one that leads to the lollipops. And for about 5 minutes, I'll just make up a story and I'll add lots of visuals and, you know, lots of fun bright colors and things so that she can visualize it in her mind. And she'll just kind of really fall into deep relaxation mode. And then when I see that she's really relaxed, I'll say, you know, we had a wonderful trip to the lollipop forest, and now it's time for mommy and Riley to go to sleep. And then I kiss her goodnight and go out of her room. And parents kind of say to me like, oh, I don't think I can do that. It's weird. It's embarrassing. I'm not creative enough. But you know what? Everybody's creative enough to come up with a 5-minute story. And, you know, for a boy, it might be something different. You know, they might want to go to outer space. Who knows? They might want to go to the lollipop forest. I don't know. Or to the ocean. But, you know, you kind of come up with your stories. And if you just build it in and that's your last 5 minutes, it's really a relaxing way for everybody to end the night and decrease the battles.
Yeah, I can remember when my one of my grandchildren was younger, he always wanted to go on a spaceship. And so we used to, just before he went to sleep, we were always going places on spaceships.
It's fun. And if you cue them to do the deep breathing, that helps really slow their bodies down and slow their brains down and just helps them fall into that relaxing state.
It does indeed. Can you tell our listeners where they can get your book? As I said, it really is full of ideas, and it's a great comfort too, because, you know, it talks to parents. They don't have to be perfect in everything they do with their children.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate the positive feedback. Yeah, it's available at Amazon. You know, you can get it at Barnes & Noble. I'd certainly love it if you would support your local independent bookstore. It's available everywhere.
And is there a follow-up in the works?
I'm working on it now, so to be continued, but yes, there is.
Can you give us a little sneak preview of what's going to be in that one?
I can't just yet because I haven't signed on the dotted line yet.
Oh, dear. Okay. Is there any last thing that you would like to share with our parents that are listening? I mean, if there's one thing that you feel every parent needs to hear, what would it be?
I think that every parent needs to hear that, you know, you're doing your best. You're doing a good job. And everybody has bad parenting moments and everybody has wonderful parenting moments. And, you know, we can't create a perfect childhood for our children. But what we can do is enjoy those small moments and really enjoy them at every stage and just do our best to be present and be with them.
Great advice. Now, before we go, you actually contribute to a lot of online magazines. Would you like to just, you know, tell us about some of those?
I do. I contribute to mom.me, which is a wonderful, you know, website for moms, but really all parents. I mean, it's not just moms, you know, dads will get something out of it too. There's a wonderful group of writers there covering all things parenting. Momtastic is another wonderful resource for parents, has a lot of good information. They stay very much on top of current research and practices, which is good. And you know, you can find me on the Washington Post. You can find me on the Huffington Post. I'm covering all things parenting. They're all kind of great resources, but I always say to parents, you know, don't read everything just because everything is there. Read what you need at the moment, you know, search out what you need at the moment, because otherwise it's too overwhelming.
And we're right back to the beginning, which is follow your own instincts.
Yes, that's right.
Katie Hurley, thank you. It's been a delight.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Katie. The Happy Kid Handbook is published by Tatcha Penguin and available from all good bookstores, as well as that other place online. That's all for this week. The Inspired Parenting Radio Show is brought to you by inspiredparenting.com. Do go check out all the free articles and the many benefits of subscribing. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for being with me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.